The dial tone was a thin electronic scream in my ear, the only sound in my darkened kitchen at 2 a.m., besides the hum of the refrigerator. I remember the condensation on my glass of cheap Pinot Grigio, the way the light from the microwave clock caught the shaking of my fingers. I pressed 1 for English. I pressed 4 to report ethical violations and workplace harassment. I believed the recorded voice, that smooth corporate-approved contralto promising me that this line was a sanctuary, a third-party vault where my career wouldn't go to die. I told that vault everything. I told it about the strategy sessions in the Marriott lounge where Sarah, my director, would let her hand linger on my knee just a second too long while explaining my KPIs. I told it about the late-night Slack messages that weren't about spreadsheets, but about how lonely her king-sized bed felt since the divorce. I spilled it all, the words tumbling out like a confession in a booth, thinking the anonymity was my bulletproof vest. I didn't know I was just handing them the gun. The next morning, the office felt different. It was the same beige carpet, the same smell of burnt Keurig pods and industrial glass cleaner. But the air was heavy, thick with a static I could feel on my skin. Sarah wasn't in her glass-walled office. She was in the conference room with Elena from HR. Elena was the kind of woman who wore her blonde hair in a bun so tight it seemed to pull the corners of her eyes back. A perpetual expression of professional skepticism. They were laughing. It wasn't the polite corporate chuckle you give a bad joke in a town hall. It was the intimate, jagged laughter of two people who shared a secret. I sat at my desk, my heart hammering a frantic rhythm against my ribs, trying to focus on a Q3 forecast that felt like a foreign language. My phone buzzed, a Slack message from Sarah. "Are you doing okay, honey? You looked a little peaked when you came in. My office at 10 o'clock? The word honey felt like a razor blade across my throat. She never called me honey in writing. Never. The walk to her office felt like a mile. Every head that turned, every good morning from a coworker, felt like a coded message. A mockery of the girl who thought she could take down the queen. I walked in, and the door clicked shut behind me with a finality that made my stomach drop. Elena was still there, sitting in the guest chair with a legal pad across her knees. She didn't look up. She was scribbling something, her pen scratching against the paper with a rhythmic, violent sound. Sarah was behind her desk, framed by the skyline, looking radiant in a cream-colored silk blouse that probably cost more than my monthly rent. She didn't ask me to sit. She just leaned back, her eyes tracking me with a predatory stillness that made the wine from the night before turn to lead in my gut. She asked me again if I was doing okay, her voice dripping with a faux maternal concern that made my skin crawl. She mentioned that someone had reached out to the integrity line with some very distressing and confused allegations. She didn't say my name. She didn't have to. She just let the silence stretch, a yawning chasm between us, while she picked a microscopic piece of lint off her sleeve. Elena finally looked up, her blue eyes as cold as a January morning in Chicago. She told me that the company takes these reports seriously. So seriously that they had to immediately cross-reference the anonymous metadata with the IP logs of the employee portal. They knew. They knew the call came from my house. They knew I was the one who tried to break the cycle. Sarah stood up then, walking around the desk with that fluid, terrifying grace. She stood so close I could smell her perfume, something expensive and floral that now smelled like a funeral. She didn't touch me, but she leaned in, her voice a low vibration that only I could hear. She told me that loyalty is the only currency that matters in this building. She told me that Elena was her maid of honor 10 years ago, and that HR isn't there to protect the people, it's there to protect the assets. And Sarah? Sarah was the top billing director in the Northeast. I was just an associate with a propensity for imagination, Elena chimed in, her voice flat and clinical, as if she were reading a weather report. She mentioned that my recent performance reviews, the ones Sarah had personally written as exceeds expectations, were being reevaluated for accuracy. Apparently, there were concerns about my emotional stability and my cultural fit. They weren't firing me, not yet. That would be too messy. No, they were going to make me stay. They were going to make me sit in that cubicle, 50 feet away from the woman who hunted me, and watch as they stripped away my projects, my clients, and my dignity. They were going to gaslight me until I started to wonder if I really had imagined those hands on my knees, if I really had misread those late-night slacks. I looked at the legal pad on Elena's lap. I saw my name at the top, circled in red. Underneath it, in neat cursive script, were the words Severance Trap and NDS Non-Negotiable. They had the paperwork ready before I even walked into the room. They had spent the hours between my 2 a.m. call and my 9 a.m. arrival building a cage. Sarah smiled then, a thin, triumphant curve of her lips that didn't reach her eyes. She told me she wanted me to take the rest of the day off to get my head straight. She said she'd handle my meetings. She said she'd take care of everything. I walked out of that office, and the fluorescent lights felt blinding, the humming of the printers sounding like a swarm of hornets. I passed the break room and saw the poster for the anonymous ethics hotline tacked to the corkboard, right next to the flyer for the company picnic. It looked so innocent. A silhouette of a person. A phone icon. The word trust in bold, blue letters. I wanted to scream. I wanted to rip it off the wall and shred it into a thousand pieces, but I couldn't move. My legs felt like they were made of water. I reached my desk and saw a small white envelope sitting on my keyboard. No stamp, no return address, just my name written in Sarah's elegant looping hand. I opened it, my breath hitching in my chest. Inside was a single Polaroid photo. It was from the holiday party 3 months ago. In the photo, Sarah has her arm draped over my shoulder, and I'm laughing, a drink in my hand, looking perfectly happy, perfectly complicit. On the back, she had written, "Memory is such a fickle thing, isn't it? See you Monday." I looked at my computer screen. My access to the shared drive was already gone. The access denied box stared back at me. A digital tombstone for a career I had spent 5 years building. I realized then that the hotline wasn't a safety net. It was a filter. It was designed to catch the impurities like me and hand them directly to the people who owned the company. I wasn't the whistleblower. I was the evidence being disposed of. I gathered my purse, leaving my favorite mug and the succulent on my desk. I didn't want anything from this place. As I walked toward the elevators, I saw Elena and Sarah walking toward the executive dining room, their heads close together, whispering. They didn't even look at me. I was already a ghost to them. I got into the elevator, the doors sliding shut with a soft, metallic hiss. As the floor numbers ticked down, I realized I still had my phone in my hand. I looked at the call log. 2:04 a.m., 14 minutes and 22 seconds. That was the price of my life. 14 minutes of honesty for a lifetime of being blacklisted. The elevator hit the lobby, and the doors opened to the street. The city was loud, chaotic, and indifferent. I stepped out into the humid air, the noise of the traffic drowning out the ringing in my ears. I reached into my bag and pulled out the Polaroid. I didn't tear it up. I tucked it into my wallet, right behind my ID. If they wanted a war of memories, I would give them one. But as I walked toward the subway, I saw a black SUV idling at the curb, the windows tinted so dark I couldn't see the driver. It started to crawl along the curb, matching my pace, block after block. My phone vibrated in my pocket, a new message from an unknown number. "The ride is waiting, honey. We aren't finished." I didn't stop. I didn't look back. I just kept walking, the cold realization settling into my bones that the hotline hadn't just reported me to HR. It had handed me over to something much, much worse.